the deal. An Aussie, a Canuck, and an ugly American walk into a bar. What happens next? Who the hell knows? It could be almost anything. But we're going to find out tonight, starting on the debut of Vigilante Happy Hour. I'm Alan Leveroni, and I'm one of your hosts. But Happy Hour tends to get kind of wild around here, plus I'm only good for short stretches of lucidity, as anyone who knows me can attest. So our author's on the air, producer Pam Scott. And an ugly American walk into a bar. What happens next? Who the hell knows? It could be almost anything. But we're going to find out tonight, starting on the debut of Vigilante Happy Hour. That was our first glitch, by the way. I'm Alan Leveroni, and I'm one of your hosts, but Happy Hour does tend to get kind of wild, and I am only good for short stretches of lucidity. So Pam Stack, our Authors on the Air producer, decided it would be wise to have three hosts. I'm joined from the Great White North now by author Claude Bouchard, and from way down under where it's tomorrow already, by author Luke Romaine. How are you guys doing? Are you as nervous as I am?
Nervous, terrified.
Oh, good. Me too. Well, you know, I mentioned on social media this past week that this is the first time in radio history a show has been hosted simultaneously from three different countries on two separate continents. I don't know if that's true or not. I kind of doubt it. But I love the way it sounds, so I'm going to keep repeating it till someone calls me on it, and probably after. But we can add a fourth country into the mix tonight, because joining us from his super-secret compound somewhere in Mexico is the talented, prolific, and extremely successful thriller author, Russell Blake. Russell, thanks very much for joining us on our very first episode.
It is my pleasure, gentlemen.
It's really our pleasure, and you know, when Claude and Luke and I got together via Skype last week to lament that none of us knew what the hell we were doing, it was supposed to be a production meeting, but it really degenerated into us realizing we didn't know what we were doing. Claude said something to the effect of, what could possibly go wrong with giving three idiots their own radio show? Well, hopefully we won't find out the answer to that question tonight, but I can tell you we're very comforted knowing we have you to rely on as the voice of reason and sanity, because you've been on Authors on the Air many times, so welcome.
Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. We can talk about pretty much anything you like except my past, my present, and probably my future. We should leave out of that as well. So anything else, wide open.
Well, the beauty with this, Russell, is that since you are a fiction writer, you can answer whatever questions we ask, and whether it's the truth or not, who really cares?
Well, that's actually the approach I take with my tax returns, so you won't be the first to sort of hear that.
See, that's a scary thing. You actually earn enough as an author to actually have to pay taxes.
I've been advised not to answer that by my attorney, but I'm thankful. Yeah, I'm thankful that a few people at least have bought some of my books.
Just one or two, I think.
Well, you know, I'm not good with numbers.
As long as you're good with letters, mate, that's the most important thing. How's things in Mexico at the moment?
By the way, I hope you enjoyed my little guitar jam there at the beginning. I've been working that riff for a while, and I figured get enough of it.
It's funny you mentioned that, Russell, because that is one question that I did want to throw at you. You've mentioned in the past that you have played guitar, you have played in bands, so on and so forth, and trying to find yourself. I was wondering if you still do play any guitar at all, either professionally or just to amuse yourself.
You know, the last time I picked up a guitar, and this is absolutely true. And this is a shocker, I had been drinking, and As I recall, it was about 3 in the morning.
Yesterday?
Well, that would actually be today. No, it was 3 in the morning, and for some reason, I wound up in a car with, among other people, a mariachi who had an ancient acoustic guitar. And I taught him how to play Highway to Hell, which is difficult because you actually, well, number one, on an acoustic guitar at 3 in the morning and, cocktails afloat, it's not the easiest to remember how to play after 15 or 20 years without playing it. But I actually got it right. And the secret is you have to bar the low E string with your thumb on some of the chords in order to play it correctly. So that's my bit of guitar trivia for the evening.
You know, I don't know anything about playing the guitar or much of anything else for that matter, but I've been told we have a call already. The number to call in if you want to talk to Russell Blake is 347-633-9609. We have most of an hour left, so you got a good chance of getting through. And we have a call already from area code 727. Who'd like to talk to Russell Blake? Hello?
Well, I can field that question all day long.
It's a good answer anyway.
We've already broken the internet.
Yeah, apparently. I did it before we even started.
I'm still convinced this isn't live.
Yeah.
Area code 727, you're live?
Apparently not.
Hey, all right, well, here we go. We're off and running.
I was going to say, how many more minutes is this?
Did one of us say the other night when we were chatting, guys, that what could possibly go wrong? I think we're finding out.
We're starting to find out. I have a question for you, Russell.
Sure.
I listened to a number of interviews that you did on this Authors on the Air radio network with Pam in the
past.
Did
you lose a bet or something?
What's that? But I have a question for you as a reader, really, more than a writer.
Sure.
You said something that I found really interesting. You said you can write 10 to 12,000 words a day with an outline, but without outlining, it would be 2,000 words a day if I'm lucky. That was probably maybe from like a year ago. How long does it take you to outline a typical length novel? Because I've tried doing that in the past, and I really struggle with that. So how much effort do you put into your outline, and then how closely do you follow it after you've finished it?
Well, if you've read any of my books, you would know that almost no effort goes into any part of them, but especially the outlines, where it's pretty much, I just, the characters are interchangeable pretty much across any of my novels, and the plot's usually the same, so I can knock out an outline in 2 or 3 days on that. Yeah, I just have to remember which book I'm writing.
Alan, the secret is changing the names of the characters.
Oh,
you don't necessarily have to do that.
No, that's why you've got
a
series.
You can always just make one an animal, like you can make, one a horse or something.
Well, that was going to be another one of my questions. How the hell do you keep track of all your characters when you write so many different series?
I have a really good editor, and, when you outline, you're sort of forced. You can go back to the outline for the prior book and sort of, get all of the characters back. Although my editor tends to like just changing the names of characters arbitrarily, and she knows I never review her work, so...
so she gets basically whatever she wants into the book.
Yeah, pretty much. And that makes continuity a little bit of a problem because I think I call the horse, Colt, and it turns out it's actually Tango. So, there's a little bit of derm and straying there. But usually I just, we refer back to, I create a cheat sheet for each series. So I know whatever the current name of the characters are. And I can refer back from there. But the truthful answer is it takes me about 3 full-time days to sit down from start to finish and knock out 50 chapters of that one.
Really?
And I keep the outline to no more than 1 to 2 sentences per chapter, because if I can't synthesize what the chapter is going to be about and what the point of the chapter is, what the reversal is going to be, if there's going to be one, what the action beat is going to be, what important information is contained in the chapter. I 86 the chapter. It's not a chapter unless,
right,
you know, there's adequate meat to it.
Do you start out with a plan as far as I know you're extremely prolific. You know, obviously you've put out a ton of books. Do you?
I think like 53 now or 54.
That's incredible to me. How far in advance
incredible
are you?
Incredible to everyone.
Schedule planned. Like what? How many books in advance are you looking? What? I'm assuming you know what you're going to do after you're finished with what you're working on now. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, I know that I've got to write another jet to release it in the June time frame, and then I'm sort of, you know, toying with what I'm going to write after that, but I know I'll probably release the jet around Christmas time, and depending, you know, on what idea comes to me, I might do some more of my post-apocalyptic series, Day After Never. You know, it seems like A Girl Apart has got some legs, so I'll probably have to release one of those about every 6 months in order to keep the series vital.
Mm-hmm.
So the truth is that my real challenge is number of hours of the day.
I can well imagine.
Russell,
I mean, seriously.
Russell, going a step or, you know, extending a bit on the question regarding outlines, taking a step before that is with the number of books that you're talking about, you know, in the works or coming in the future, not just the ones in the past, where do the ideas come from? What's your idea generator besides tequila?
No, I was going to say, you don't need anything besides tequila.
Tequila and a dartboard.
Well, pretty much, and a complete inability to gauge the difference between a good or a bad idea. I think that comes first. And then you season it literally with, you know, enough high octane alcohol, and eventually, you know, a book idea pops out.
You know, I was going to ask you about A Girl Apart later, but maybe I'll do that now since you mentioned it.
Yeah.
It's your latest release. Came
you
out
see
this
what I did there?
Month. Nicely done.
Yeah,
seamless. Why a journalist? Well, I mean, hopefully I'm not giving away any spoilers by indicating what Liam Mason does, but that's a little bit of a departure.
Thanks a lot,
for you,
Alan.
Damn it, Alan.
Yeah, no.
You ruined it for all of us.
Damn it.
Pretty much.
I can't be trusted.
That's all right. Russell will have another 5 books out next week, so it's okay.
Well, it was either going to be a journalist or she was going to be one of the undead. And that would have taken it into a slightly different, probably more lucrative direction. So I went with journalist.
Yeah, that's a tough decision to make. You know, yeah. We had a call earlier that got dropped. We have another call from the same area code. I'm assuming it's the same person. Caller from area code 727. You're on the air with Russell Blake. Go ahead.
Thank you. This is Ron and Gina Schiller. Been friends of Claude for 25 years.
Hey, Ron, nice to hear from you.
Hey, nice to hear from you. The invitation to stay here still stands, so.
We're keeping
it. Next year you might be coming to St. Petersburg, so we're here, we're waiting.
We're keeping it in mind, just have to sell more books.
All right. Hey, question for Russell. I've friended you on Facebook through Claude's, you know, obviously you guys share back and forth, and I saw some of your posts through him liking it. And I know you live in Mexico. I haven't read your books, but I know you live in Mexico. But I've never seen on any of your posts where in Mexico you live.
Well, I spend most of my time in the Los Cabos area, Cabo San Lucas, San Jose del Cabo. I've been down here for 15 years.
That's a long time.
Well, you know, it's you're in St. Petersburg, and I hear Russia has these incredible winters, so I won't be visiting. But Claude's probably used to that, being Canadian.
It's a lot warmer here.
Oh.
It's a lot warmer in this St. Petersburg than that one.
Oh, okay. But you got that whole Putin thing, so I'm going to stay out of that until until all this political stuff dies down, which I heard, by the way, guys, I heard you guys had an election recently, didn't you?
Well,
see, Alan, that's one thing you should have brought into the rules right at the beginning in the intro.
Yeah.
Let's not talk politics.
My next question for Russell is going to be how if he's having any luck getting over the wall, but I don't know. I guess.
Yeah, Jesus wants me to. So,
are you going to just stand on the other side, Russell, and start throwing books over to America?
Well, actually, I was thinking of writing a how to evade the wall guide for Americans that want to get around the wall in about another year or two.
What about another one called Digging for Dummies?
Digging for Dummies. There you go. Actually, you I mean, go. I think one of my books, I think one of the assassin books, actually, I wrote, I was probably talking out of school, but there's actually a number of very simple ways, if you've got any kind of money at all, to completely evade American customs coming in from the South. So that's just reality. And the Border Patrol knows it. I know it. You know, anyone that lives in Mexico knows it. So
well, the
I'm
way
not
things
sure
are going,
what a difference it will.
The way things are going, I might need to contact you on ideas of getting over there from Australia soon.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Qantas has a special fare, don't they, one way?
Yeah. Well, I think it's one way out of the country.
Ah, okay. Well,
yeah.
I love Australia. I used to spend a lot of time there.
Yeah, which part?
My favorite is Melbourne.
Oh, okay. You're one of those people.
And, I like Sydney. I spent some time in Perth. But Melbourne had, I don't know, it had the most charm to me.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. I've never been there.
No?
It's too cold for me.
Where do you go? You're up from Brisbane?
No, I'm up in Cairns where the cyclone is at the moment.
Good God.
Yeah. You know, it's a happening place.
That's the surface of the sun in the winter, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. You know, yeah. It's a... We spend a lot of time. Well, it keeps me in my office, which is air-conditioned, which is nice.
Until the cyclone knocks the power out.
Yeah, well, we've managed to avoid this one. You know, we jumped a little bit north to get out of the way of it.
Okay.
So it's hit south of where I live, which is nice. So it's got a beautiful day outside. No trees flying sideways.
Okay, well, that's always a good... You know, I went through a big one 2 years ago. In fact... I think that hurricane hit when I was on with you, Howie, on Authors in the Air, and it literally the hurricane hit that night.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I remember reading something about that. You were out of power, weren't you, for a couple of days?
The whole town went down for, I think there was no power for 2.5 weeks.
I think Russell was out of house.
Yeah.
But fortunately, tequila doesn't require refrigeration.
Ah, so that's I'll remember that for the next time we're out of power. Because we had a hurricane, cyclone here. It was a Category 5 a few years ago, and we were out of power for 3 days. Everyone just about died.
Yeah, but Australians, the Australians, they'll just sit or hang out and drink warm beer and kind of go, well, that was no good, was it, Mike? Yeah, but, I mean, in Mexico, it's a little hairier because, there's not a lot of infrastructure to start with, and you really have no idea when and if anything is ever going to come back to normal.
Can I ask you, Russell, what sort of prompted the move down to Mexico? Was it just politics, or was it just the area that you fell in love with?
Well, you know, it was a combination of restraining orders and debt collection, really.
Fair enough. Well, that's good reason.
I actually moved after 9/11 and the Patriot Act came in. I sort of saw the writing on the wall and decided I wanted to move to other climes.
Yeah. And you like, obviously, you've been there for 15 years. You like living in Mexico. Is there anything you miss about the States?
Not really. I mean, I understand Teslas are kind of good cars. That's about the only thing I can immediately think of.
I don't know.
I mean,
they
have all of the same restaurant chains. So really, it's It's not like it probably was 25 years ago where, you know, you're picturing burros and cactus and a guy in a sombrero.
That's exactly what I was picturing.
Well, that's many people think that way about Australia. It is nothing like that. Okay, nothing,
yeah.
Except up in Cairns, I understand.
Well, I try and avoid the stereotypes, and then I posted a video recently of me playing with a baby kangaroo, so that really didn't work out too well.
But were you like pitching a baby koala at it, or?
No, I couldn't find one that was hairy enough.
I see. I heard they have all got herpes. Did you hear that?
Excuse me, what?
I heard that all the koalas have herpes.
Not the ones near me.
Okay, well, that's your story anyway. But,
or that's what he's hoping.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, you can Google that. I'm
tourists.
Serious. I didn't invent that.
That's probably from tourists trying to kiss them or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah, you get a lot of that with the tourist ladies off the cruise ships too. But,
yeah. It's not like they can run away. They're pretty slow creatures. get the Japanese tourists running around kissing them all over the place. It's screwed.
So sloth hunting is a big pastime down there?
Sloth hunting? We don't have sloths in Australia. They're not dangerous enough.
Oh, that's true. Don't they have something like pine cones that are the size of an economy car that can kill you?
Pretty much everything kills you in Australia.
The jellyfish.
You know, our blades of grass are actually blades. The jellyfish kill you. Yeah, the box jellyfish, they're horrendous, actually. We've got them where I live. I had great pleasure. I was doing security for a film crew for the Pacific. And I had great pleasure telling one of the producers about everything in the area of the film site that we were doing a big battle scene. I was telling him all about, you know, what could kill him and what we had seen there while doing security. And it turned out this is one of the major producers from America, a guy named Tony Toe. And I freaked him out that bad. He didn't want to come onto the sets anymore.
So you're not going to, you probably are not going to be working as at the Chamber of Commerce for much longer.
No, that was the last film I actually did. So I don't know if they're connected.
Couldn't tell you why.
Oh, dear. I better let someone else talk. When do you guys want to talk?
Russell, what's it like working with Clive Cussler? Do you have any intention of writing any more books with Clive Cussler?
You know, I really enjoyed it. And, you know, a couple of novels. It was a lot of fun. I learned a lot. But I think, you know, I think especially that Fargo series, they wanted a female voice to sort of carry it forward since it was a couple. So, I don't see that happening. And frankly, you know, I enjoyed it a lot. And Clive's agent is my agent. So I got one of the best agents in New York out of the deal. I consider that a massive win. And, I think, you know, with my writing schedule, I've got more than enough stuff sort of – I'm involved in more than enough stuff as it sits. I also have a building business down here in Mexico that does, you know, custom home building. So I've got a pretty full plate.
How did that process work briefly, Russell, with Cussler? Did you spend a lot of time with him? Was it just exchanging stuff back and forth?
Well, he would order me to dance, and then I would, you know, jump around in a little jester outfit. So
the pole dancing experience.
He really seemed to enjoy that quite a bit. And he
Russell, you said that right when I took a sip of my drink and I just about sprayed coffee all over my computer.
Well, you're Australian. What are you doing drinking coffee? There's no alcohol in that.
It's iced coffee and it's midday. It's 11:30 in the morning here, so yeah.
Oh, yeah. That, like that ever stopped anyone. Okay.
Guys, if you can hang on for a second, we need to take a station break and we'll be right back.
Thanks so much. You're listening to Vigilante Happy Hour on the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. This is a trademark copyrighted podcast solely owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. If you want to call in and speak to Alan, Luke, Claude, or to Russell, the number is 347-633-9609. Give us a call. You got 30 minutes, and someone might win Russell's new book. Back with you, Alan.
Russell, did you have a hard time writing in a different voice when you wrote with Clive Cussler after writing all your own novels?
That's actually a very good question. Not really, because you know I had read the entire Fargo series before sort of tackling the job.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't find it that difficult changing voices. I know some people do. I don't. I've found it fairly easy to do. Like, if you ever read my my new adult trilogy, you know, writing as a teenage female runaway, completely different voice than anything else. If you read my black stuff, my black noir novels, completely different voice than you know, the action adventure stuff. So I think I'm almost like a method actor. I just sit down, immerse myself in whatever the world is, and then, you know, the voice becomes sort of ingrained in me, whatever it needs to be. Like
that's
with
a
Black,
rare talent.
I can sort of channel Raymond Chandler.
Well, that's a pretty good place to start channeling.
One last question
about Clive Cussler, because I'm fascinated
sure.
whole collaboration thing, and then I'll leave it alone. Did you have to make...
I never slept with him. That's what... Where you're
okay,
going.
Thanks. I wasn't sure how to
that's
ask.
That's not what he told
actually,
me.
Actually, I've signed, you know, I've got legal agreements where I don't discuss any of that. So.
Well, I wouldn't want you to have to break that.
Okay.
Why another series? This Girl Apart is a fantastic book. I just finished it a couple of days ago. It only took me 2 days to read, even though... You know, between working full time and my own writing and everything, it's hard to find the time to read. But I just devoured that book. It's a terrific book. What made you decide to start another series when you have so many going and you already talked about how few hours are in a day? Why?
You know, I wanted to try a different kind of protagonist. I mean, that's really the net of it. I wanted to try a protagonist that, you know, wasn't an ex-SEAL, you know, didn't have superpowers. You know, that was somebody that was really very real-worldy and warts and all and sort of didn't have any special skills other than, you know, being an investigative journalist, which really is just having a healthy dose of skepticism and, well, at least in fiction, that's what an investigative journalist would have.
Right.
Healthy deal, a degree of skepticism and, you know, just being able to think on her feet. So if you read my other female protags, like Jet, she's sort of, you know, she's La Femme Nikita. She's born. She's got a lot of skills.
Mm-hmm.
And if you read, you know, my Ramsey stuff, you know, Drake Ramsey, you know, he develops skills as he goes along. But I wanted somebody that was really sort of vulnerable, and you know the tension there was that you couldn't be sure she was going to come out of any situation particularly well. Like
I would agree
the
with that.
Appeal to me was you just you know it, there's not like that. Oh, she's going to be fine. You know, through it. There's this sense that you know bullets don't bounce off of her. You know, she doesn't make a phone call and talk to the mentor who explains everything to her and how to be MacGyver, you know, build a car engine out of tinfoil and some saran wrap in order to get out of the situation. So I wanted to explore that sort of that type of a vulnerable female protag who's grappling sort of in a man's world, if you will.
Well, you established at the very beginning of the book how, you know, she had reached the heights of her profession pretty much and due to one or two bad decisions saw it all slip away and now she's basically starting again at the bottom of the rung of the ladder and trying to work her way back, which
I think hopefully a lot of people can relate to that.
Exactly.
I know I can.
Yeah, we all can, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to the extent that we've all been 20-something female investigative journalists, I suppose it resonates.
Right.
Okay. Especially Luke, right?
Yeah, yeah. I, you know, I remember my time, you know, frolicking in my skirts.
And at least now you have guidance on which bathroom to use, so we made progress.
Well, Australia will catch up to that in 20 years.
Yeah, no, I'm quite sure it will, actually.
Yeah, we're like a micro USA over here. We're just a little bit behind.
Well, I remember it as being somewhat different, but I will defer to your wisdom. You have more experience than I do.
Hopefully we don't follow in the paths of some of the political decisions recently, although some of our politicians over here are trying to emulate certain people over there.
So they're colorful?
Yeah, you could call them, well, you know, colorful is not necessarily the word I would use.
Okay.
Dumb as dog shit.
Well, I know about as much about Australian politics as I know about astrophysics. So,
you're a very smart man, Russell. I'll come to you for advice when the time comes.
Yeah, no, I could write books about it. In other words,
no.
And what have you been doing to keep busy? It's been a long time. I don't think we've actually ever talked in person, have we?
Who was your question addressed
to?
No, I just missed who you were asking the question. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I said Claude.
Oh, sorry. I missed that. I've been doing fine.
Stop being so polite.
I've been doing fine, hibernating in the winter as usual during the winter months.
Okay.
Working on the next book in the series, although this one is I don't have your ability to pop out 19 stories a week, so it's not always as quick as we'd like, but to each his own kind of thing.
No, you need a little more fear and desperation. I think that's the key.
Oh, maybe I'm just too laid back.
Not enough bill collectors knocking at the door.
Right, you go.
That might be the problem.
It's because you live in Canada, Claude, and everyone's nice over there. Move down to Mexico for a short time, where, you know, there's the potential of someone chopping your head off if you don't pay your bills.
No, well, we try to vacation down there once a year to just to get the feel of it.
Not to insult anyone from Mexico, by the way, who's listening.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure we've got a very large group from Mexico on the line.
Oh, I'm sure that we have a very large audience as it is worldwide. So.
Yeah, although Pam has shared with me, I mean, just some amazing numbers of listeners that whenever we're misguided enough to sort of like do another one of our rounds, I mean, it's hundreds of thousands of listens, which is, within a week. So it's kind of amazing the number of people. Well, that basically it just shows you the power of if you don't charge for something.
Yeah.
Honestly, like
doing it
stuff.
At this time of night.
Yeah, no, if Nielsen was tracking this, you know, I would be in a different business at this point.
Russell, I did have a question that I wanted to ask you, and It really pertains to the use of a pen name, but going past that, I know having seen Facebook posts so on and so forth that over time you have met some of your readers, people going down to Cabo and getting together with you and photos up on Facebook after the fact. Somebody comes and goes to have lunch with Russell Blake. What do they call Russell Blake? Who are they meeting? Are they meeting Russell Blake, or are they meeting the person who goes by the name of Russell Blake as a writer?
Well, I mean, a little bit of both. Usually everyone just calls me Russell, which is fine. I mean, that's my literary persona. And since I write, you know, I'm in that groove, so to speak, you know, 14 to 16 hours a day. It's not hard to beat Russell all the time. Let me put it that way. So everybody generally that I've met with, you know, comes in and, you know, they call me Russell. You know, I was hanging out with a bunch of people in Cuba recently, some other authors, and everyone called me Russell.
That was that when you met Hugh Howey over there, Russell?
Yeah, he's got a big boat. He's tripping the light fantastic. He's living the dream, so to speak.
Yeah.
We had a great week hanging out. It was a good trip.
I think he's potentially heading over to Australia. I saw something recently he posted. It looked like he's heading through the Pacific. It's a pretty long journey, I think.
Yeah, I think it's a five-year cruise, but he is heading his way over to Australia. And one of the things I brought, actually, to Cuba, besides a bottle of very high-end tequila, was a bottle of Australian Penfold's Grandfather's Port.
Oh, okay.
Which is an Australian tawny port, 20-year tawny. And it was absolutely the favorite beverage on the boat.
Really?
So he'll make it there just to buy that.
Well, I if he turns up in Cairns, I'll wander down to the marina here and see if I can say hi to him.
Yeah, and by the way, he's an absolutely charming, great guy. I mean, yeah, it was a great week to just hang out with him and a bunch of other people, and you know, I would do it again in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Yeah, he seems lovely. I every now and then see his posts come through my timeline. We've been friends on Facebook for quite some time. I've never met him in person, but it'd be lovely to run into him if the chance arose.
Well, you actually came up in a conversation, and he said, not in a million years, but I think, sure, no problem.
Well, there goes that dream dashed, but that's okay. I'll still stalk him. That's fine. They've got cages around the marina.
Yeah, no, you just give off a little bit of that serial killer vibe. I mean,
the death,
don't take
the
that
desperation.
The wrong way. Yeah.
That's fine. I get that a lot.
No,
I'm used to that.
I mean it in only the best possible way, Luke.
I do like honesty, Russell.
Well.
No, and Luke, if you come up to him from behind, I mean, you're a big enough guy. You can take
wait
him.
Wait a minute. Whoa,
yeah,
whoa.
I prefer not to come up, guys, from behind there, Clove.
Calm down. No more prison talk, guys.
Yeah. Where have you been hanging out?
It's not that kind of a show. We have kids listening.
No, we shouldn't, because Pam warned everyone to hide their kids and their small animals. So the kids
I,
should
I
be
actually
okay.
Did see that warning,
makes
so
the kids
yeah.
want to listen even more.
Yeah.
So when we start talking about how to freebase bath salts or something, we need to make sure it's a little later at night.
Right.
By the way, kids, don't freebase bath salts.
I'm a bit naive cancel. There. I don't know what you're talking about, Russell.
There you go.
That must be an American thing. I don't understand.
No, it's
we'll
actually British, apparently, UK. I'm very well-rounded in substance abuse from all over the world because of the internet.
So. Oh, it's good to have a hobby.
The mind is one's playground.
Russell, you said in living in Mexico, would you ever consider moving back to the United States? And is there somewhere else that you'd like to at some point visit or live?
Well, no, the answer is no, I wouldn't move back to the U.S. because for just a host of reasons. But after being, I've lived over, 25% of my life now outside of the U.S. Actually, more than that if you count, you know, my misspent youth. So, I'm not sure I was ever a particularly good sort of American anyway. I was kind of bad at it.
You were bad at being an American.
I just wasn't. I wasn't very good at it. I didn't, you know, eat a lot of fried food. I wasn't super, you know, patriotic. I didn't like football. So, I'm not sure that the country is really missing anything by my absence or vice versa. But in terms of places I'd like to live, like I said, Melbourne was my second choice if Mexico didn't work out.
Well, they're very
How often
similar.
Have you been there?
It's at least, you know, I mean, it's been 15 years, but it was turning into the world capital of eating and drinking when I was there. And I went, I want to say, 7 or 8 times. I really liked it. I mean, I really was considering moving there.
Is there some place you'd like to see that you haven't?
Yeah, Thailand, but I'm not sure I would live through that. Actually, funny you say that, Russell.
I'm off to Thailand in about 2 months.
Oh, look at you.
You could come over and say hi.
Yeah, stay away from the koalas while you're there. That's my advice, okay?
Different kind of koalas. Nay
on the koala aid.
Yeah, they've definitely got herpes.
Yeah.
I have a question about
workload.
Remember
what you said when I said that. Just say, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yep, that's exactly right.
There you go. But no, I've spent a lot of time banging around in Europe, so I don't really have any desire to live. Maybe, you know, in Provence would be nice. I mean, I've got some friends that are authors that live in the south of France. It's nice. But, you know, I kind of like Mexico.
Yeah.
I mean, if you skip over the cartel killings and the beheadings and the dismemberments and everything, it's really a lovely place.
I have a question for you about Mexico. And it's about a line that I read in A Girl Apart that I found really interesting. It was a piece of dialogue, and here's the line. Mexico is built on regrets and missed opportunities. We move on. It's all we can do. I was fascinated by that as someone who's lived in Mexico for a long time. Is that a cultural thing? Is that something that you found in the country, or is that?
Yeah, I'd say that's part and parcel of the national psyche. It's like we could have done better, you know, especially when you look at the Mexican approach to politics, which is very much like, you know, their approach to Lucha Libre, which is wrestling. Everybody knows it's fake. Nobody believes it's for real for a second. And, you know, but even, at, you know, they go out and they vote and there's lots of derm and strain, but at the end of it, you know, everyone regrets the decision they made 6 months later because it's just another crook.
Even though everyone knew it was going to happen in the first place.
Sure, but you hope. You know, there's always this little tiny bit of hope. It's like, well, maybe the masked avenger really is going to take down, you know, the Duke. You know, so there's very much a sense of your own mortality in Mexico that you don't have, at least in the U.S. There's a sense that, you know, of the passage of time culturally and the impermanence of things. So there's a lot of, oh, I wish that hadn't happened, or, oh, I wish I had done that differently. If I had only been better, faster, cheaper, or whatever, you know, I could have done X or Y differently. So there's more honesty to it. It makes you feel more alive and in the moment, I guess is the way to put it.
More down to earth.
And does that apply throughout Mexico or?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a veracity to it. Certainly as you get up into the upper class, the way that's completely insulated from reality, you probably get more distance. But I found, you know, most Mexicans tend to have a very pragmatic view of life. And there's a certain veracity to that. There's a certain just honesty to it. It's not fake. You know, I mean, a lot of relationships matter a lot more. It's more of a Latin culture. So relationships, family, you see people grow up, you see them die, you know, I mean, it's the real world. So you don't, you know, it's not what's coming through your smartphone or what you're being told to think in the media. It's, you know, you're watching real life happen in high resolution 24/7. So it's more real.
It's a slower pace, correct?
Yeah, it is a slower pace, and I think the reason it's slower is because there's more appreciation that this is the only time you get.
Mm-hmm.
There's more of a sense of, you know, anything could happen at any moment. And certainly there's a sense of impending chaos. Because look, I mean, Mexico has had, I was talking to somebody about this the other day, about every 8 to 10 years, they would have a major, like, currency financial crisis.
Right.
So, you know, and this guy was like, I want to say 60. So he's been through 7 or 8 of these in his life.
Wow. So
yeah,
there's a certain sense of acceptance there.
Yeah. There's a regret. There's a pragmatism. But there's also a sense of, well, you know, you brush yourself off and you move on.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems more, I don't know, I won't say healthier, but it seems to me, to my ear, it sounds more realistic. Now, remember, I've been out of the U.S. for 15 years, so maybe things have gotten more, although I would find that pretty difficult to believe based on my Facebook feed, but, you know, maybe things have gotten more realistic in terms of recognizing the warts and the structural problems in the society that lead people to be desperately unhappy a lot of the time. But my guess is no.
Wow. So
no,
I have to ask
sorry,
you.
I didn't mean to go that deep, by the way.
Well, no, that's
that
good.
That was pretty deep.
That's a great answer to a question that I was really curious about. So I got to lighten it up a little bit. What happened during spring break on Cabo? What's that all about?
It's still going on.
Oh, so you're going to, once this is over, you're going back out?
Oh, well, you know, it's getting dark out now, but I understand the youngins do enjoy having a cocktail or two after dark.
Is that right?
Apparently
you understand that?
No, and it's hot out.
That's what you're told?
Yeah, that's I've heard that from people.
Well, thank you for making time for us. Because
yeah.
I don't know if I would have made it back.
Well, you know, I'm calling from a cell phone, so, you know, if you hear music in the background, I have no idea what that is.
I thought I could hear the waves crashing.
You can't really hear the music, so that's well done.
Hmm. Maybe it's just in my head. When you're in Mexico, there's always music going somewhere.
Mariachi music.
No. Sometimes playing Highway to Hell.
Exactly.
I think
so
I would
very well. But, I mean, certainly enthusiastically.
Well, that's all that really matters. You've said a number of times in interviews that I've heard and read, and I quote, "Next year I'll definitely slow down."
Yeah.
That's not happening, is it?
Well, you know, I started this year doing that, but I just finished the third book of the year now. I will be starting Jet in April, so I'll knock Jet out in April. So that's 4. I was only going to write 5 or 6 for the entire year, but if I'm done with 4 by April, I'm not sure, you know, what am I going to do the rest of the time?
Yeah, exactly.
I love the casual.
You've got 14 hours of writing time a day to get through.
Sorry, I just love the casual way that you just sort of throw that out there, Russell. It's like, you know, I'm going to write this book in April, you know, and while the rest of us struggle for months and months to get a first draft out, yeah, I'm going to write one in April, and then I'll just, you know, pump out another 17, you know.
Yeah, but if you don't really have any sense of quality, it makes it a lot easier to get your draft out. It really does.
I don't
magic.
Buy that. But this is a guy who has more series going than most authors write.
Yeah, and I have to say it. I mean, I actually have a trilogy I really badly want to write, which I probably won't until next year. And then I have another series idea I may do under a pen name. And then I was talking to somebody else about doing a romance series under a pen name. So I really haven't learned.
You really
have
trouble coming up with ideas, don't you?
Yeah, no. It's like I said, ideas are the easy part. It's the execution that's a little harder.
What's the trilogy? What's the trilogy you want to write next?
Well, the trilogy is the water trilogy. I came up with this, I don't know, a couple of years ago, where water is sort of the currency in a dystopian world. And, you know, there's an island, and the island is sort of a metaphor for the planet. And there's, you know, survivors of the apocalypse. And in that society, there is a there's basically the haves and the have-nots. And 95% are agrarian and do the work, and 5% are what I would call techs or engineers. And they sort of, you know, run things, operate things, and dictate terms to the agrarian society. And water, because there's this pollution and there's a virus that has infected all of the water sources, including the ocean, water is used as the currency. And the techs have the ability to purify the water so that they can grow the crops and people can drink, et cetera, et cetera. So I thought it would be an interesting metaphor for, you know, sort of a matrixy kind of quasi-philosophical Dune-like rant about, you know, the prison of your mind being more powerful than circumstance and reality.
Okay, so this is the romance series you're talking about,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Right, so there's five sisters and there's six brothers, and one of them's not so sure about his orientation, but the other five really are, and we learn about it as we go through the book.
I'm really sorry I asked that question.
Yeah, don't worry. Pam edits all this stuff out. This will never make it onto the air.
All right. Okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
That was fascinating up until Clark got involved. Then I sort of just lost track of things.
Sort of glazed over a little bit.
It was five sisters. What?
It's okay. I haven't been paying attention since we started this whole thing. That's when I glazed over.
I can get my guitar out and play that riff again, the intro riff, about 12 times while you're trying to talk. That'll make me feel
go
a little
for
better.
It.
Actually, I think you're going to do that here in a minute anyway, because I'm told tonight. I'd like to thank our very first guest, Russell Blake, very much for putting up with us.
Let me ask the producer, Pam Stack, and the authors on the Air Global Radio Network.
Unless they come to their senses and send us packing, I'm told we'll be back in about a month, which I guess would be around the end of April. I don't know who our guest is going to be, because let's face it, nobody thought we'd make it through this thing. But thanks very much for spending your time with us, Russell, and thanks to my co-hosts and for everybody out there listening. Have a great night.
Alan, don't go away. Russell wants to ask you a question. And by the way,
no.
I don't edit spot. You know that, Russell. How many times have you been on this show? You're lying to me.
I always assume you cut out all the obscenity and the off-color jokes.
No way.
Uh-oh.
So Russell has some questions.
Yeah, no, why call it the vigilante? I mean, what does that mean? Are you guys going to go out and kill people now?
That wasn't my one. I can't remember what my suggestion was, but yeah.
Luke, you came up with 42 suggestions.
Yes.
Yeah, you did.
No, and they were fantastic.
Basically, Russell, I had posted on Facebook saying that we're looking for a name for this show, and then a bunch of people threw in names, and Dean Lappy suggested the Vigilante Happy Hour. And then Alan came on in an email the following day discussing this, and he said, "I actually like the Vigilante Happy Hour."
Doesn't
and I said,
cool?
"You know, I said I'm fine with that. I'll just point out that you know my series is the Vigilante series." And Alan said, "Like you know, that's fine, whatever." So that's where the name came from.
Okay.
So we made
special significance.
Well, yeah, we made Claude the boss because he's Claude the Vigilante Bouchard. So, and the other thing is, Luke wanted to say we're not werewolves. That was his suggestion. That generated the most interest, right?
I can't remember
that.
I was half asleep.
You're such a liar. You say that every time you post something, Luke.
We're not werewolves.
That's what he works out.
It's honest. It's got a certain je ne sais quoi about it, you know. There's your French Claude. I told you I could speak French.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know if that's French. But
I'm pretty sure it's not, but that's okay.
I just make things up.
Actually, that's what we had for dinner tonight, je ne sais quoi.
There you go. With bacon.
All right. I want to thank you guys for doing your first show here. You really suck at this. You're better on Facebook,
yeah.
But I guess you'll be back next month. And, Russell, you and I will always talk. You know, that goes without saying. Thanks a lot, guys. I hope everybody has a really good one, okay?
Thanks, Pam.
All right. Absolutely.
Thank you, Pam.
Thank you, Pam.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Talk to you all soon.
Bye.
Good night.
Good night now.
Bye.